I just looked at the watch, and I noticed that we have only 10 minutes left until dinner. I think we could go on for another couple of hours here on the podium, but I would like to offer the opportunity also for questions out of the audience. You may use a mic, but we can hear you probably as well. But if there's no question, then we just continue up here on the podium, and you have to wait for dinner another 10 minutes, so you can think about that. There, yes, here's one question.
The question is to Sven, obviously, because that was quite an interesting talk we had here. And you didn't quite answer the question of nuclear, because nuclear is often perceived as a carbon-free solution in the discussion in the United States. And it's not a renewable resource. We all know that. Uranium is depletable. And ended, not endless, and we have the waste problem, of course. So in your calculation, to go beyond Israel, which has a very specific relation to nuclear power, towards the United States, because obviously you will want to make the United States a better place as well, do you plan to include nuclear in the mix? Or do you plan to exclude it specifically? That's one of the points. And the other point is we hear about desert tech in the last panel. That is the plan to use photovoltaics in desert areas to get sun hours. And that, of course, would also be a solution where using the energy when it's produced by nature would be your option, might be a good idea. So is that in your plans somehow already?
So I'll answer, I'll take the bull by the horns and get gored a bit. So nuclear power in France is typically used as what's called base load. It runs all the time. You can't turn it off. And I've got a whole bunch of curves from a bunch of utilities that show people's electrical use. Polling the audience, who uses their hairdryer or their toaster oven at 3 o'clock in the morning? I don't see anybody. So there's excess capacity from that nuclear power. And what Shai has said is that in places like France, where they have overcapacity at night with nuclear, until that overcapacity is there, that's a carbon-free source, that's okay. It's a country-by-country decision. That's probably what would happen in France. Here, in Germany, I can see that not happening at all. You've just said it. I mean, you're shaking your head. Again, the Starbucks model. We're not going to serve a styrofoam cup where people don't want a styrofoam cup. Regarding the actual moving of carbon-free or renewable electricity around, let me give you an example of California. In California, we have what's called a renewable portfolio standard. That means by 2010, the electric utilities have to provide 20% of the electricity as a renewable resource. And there are very specific definitions of what that renewable resource is. It actually excludes most hydro because they don't consider large dams or even medium-sized dams to be a renewable resource. So what we're going to do is we're going to buy wind power separate from that renewable portfolio standard, such that for every kilowatt hour that goes into our vehicles, at least 1 kilowatt hour of renewable energy separate, can't double count, separate goes into the grid. So it will be carbon-free electricity. And what I need your help with is making sure under the low carbon fuel standard, because there will be credits generated because our fuel is so, the carbon footprint is zero, that there will be carbon credits. And we need to make sure that those carbon credits reside with us, Better Place, or with the customers, because then you'll actually have, they reside with the customers. You as a customer will have the choice of whether you want to have sustainable transportation or because you could sell those carbon credits. If they reside with us, we're not going to sell them. Because, again, if we sell them, that paper cup turns into a styrofoam cup.
And that already crosses the bridge towards the question, what actually can policymakers do to increase these kind of movements. You mentioned the low carbon fuel standard, and I want to address this last question to the three European panelists on this. If we try to keep it simple and only focus on the car question right now within the mobility sector, and you can tell that California is a state that actually can set its own standards because it's a big market, but there's no big car industry in it. So they are more, I think, much more independent in policy regulations, and ideas like Project Better Place come in this environment. How are we going to proceed with this in Europe when we have very strong German car industries that are strong in lobbyism? The Germans are being known for being environmentally progressive, build a lot of renewable energies because there's also an industry that is profiting from this, but they are not known to build the most efficient cars in the world market, and it seems to be a big obstacle. How do we get around this obstacle if it's not coming from markets, but it needs to have some policy incentives?
Well, I actually think, I mean, it's always easier to criticize than to commend. I do think we're making quite a bit of progress. It may not be fast enough, but if you look at new policies that are coming out, for example, what was just described as the biomass mix and the renewable mix in California is exactly the same now in Europe with our new renewables directive. And in fact, the move away from just focusing on biofuels and looking at other renewable energy, including wind, solar, et cetera, plus in the transport field to look at plug-ins and electrical cars as well as second generation. So I think that's already some level of progress. And the policymakers are putting in place the regulation which is going to stimulate the investment. But what I think is this mix, and I really liked Kai's presentation as well, which comes back to the issue of this hype on technology. We need to make sure that there are cross-the-board answers, some simple answers, some more complex, and solutions that we can grapple with now. And that is probably more a bottom-up approach. I don't think policymakers are going to be the ones that are going to promote that. I think it's us the people, us through NGOs, us through foundations, Greenpeace and others, that are going forward, and Kleinman Partners, et cetera, that are going forward and making these statements and starting to empower each citizen so that they know what they can do. Because there's also a lot of disinformation out there. That's one thing. In terms of industry, I also think industry is going in the right direction. Again, maybe not so fast. Yes, they have squashed some innovative answers a long time ago, but they can't get away with it now anymore. The car industry realizes, and many of them have bought into the concept of peak oil. They know that if they don't develop new cars that don't function with hydrocarbons, they don't have an industry in 20 or 30 years. That's what's forcing them. It's product availability. They have had to have a paradigm shift and are thinking in a different way. So I do think we're going in the right way. Now, what we have to do is we have to stimulate it and go faster. And that is what we're all here trying to discuss, is how we can actually do that.
If I have a look at energy forecasts, I mean, the demand of energy in the future, I see curves that go very fast up. And I reckon there is a peak oil phenomenon. I mean, some people deny it, but I think there is one. And just imagine if... Maybe we've been on the top, maybe we are now, maybe we are going to be on the top in 5 or 10 years. But just imagine if we approach peak oil and the energy demand is growing, how can we fill the gap, and how expensive is traveling then? And just imagine if driving cars is double or triple or whatever, more expensive than it is today, people won't be able to travel anymore because it's just too expensive. And I think those solutions will survive that offer transportation which is payable. Mm-hmm. And your question, are we going fast enough? I think innovative companies like yours is going fast enough, and car manufacturers that still build big cars that are fuel eaters, they might not be able to sell their cars anymore in 5 or 10 years because they haven't developed new technologies.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe the problem is solved. It's solved alone. Is that the right? Yeah.
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 So. Okay. Are we getting an as optimistic view from you?
No, I'm not. At least not regarding the electric car. Non regarding all my sympathy for your special idea. My fear is a bit that we are going to buy, in German we say, die Katze im Sack, the cat into the box. The electric car as such doesn't bring any solution at all. So what we see now is that the electric car is being sold with the vision of being carbon neutral. But be carbon neutral does not afford a car to be carbon neutral. Everything we want to do for the electric car, can we do without the electric car? We can change to renewable energy production even without having the system of the electric car. We can do this at once. So the electric car is not the precondition for having carbon neutrality. So what I say is the electric car is not a solution. And if we do not change the electricity production system before, or at least in the near future, then we buy in a system which as such doesn't bring any solution. And I very much appreciated the sentence of Kai that the future will be the affordable transportation. We may see many, many visions if the future is such that individuals may not even have any chance to be mobile anymore because they cannot afford it, then all the solutions we discuss here do not bring us any further. Again, we must come down with anything. We must downsize, not supercharge, but downsize, not the motor, but downsize everything. Then a lot of perspectives are possible, including yours. But I wouldn't like to buy into the electric car with the hope that the electric car then bring us the carbon free energy production the way is the other one. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. You want to add something?
So we didn't leave the Stone Age because we ran out of rocks. Okay. There will be always personal mobility of some flavor or another. And as that person who said at the beginning of this, I'm looking at all of my prospective customers. If I offered you a vehicle that was similar to the one you currently have in 2011, that you pay the same monthly petrol bill that you pay right now and costs 75 to 50% less than the equivalent internal combustion engine vehicle, would you buy it? Has the same range, lights, but it's electric in this flavor as opposed to diesel or petrol. Because that, at scale, with Renault making 150,000 of these vehicles and the infrastructure we put in place, that's what's going to happen. I really encourage you all to start planning. If you care about transportation and transportation of the future, start planning trips to Israel and Denmark in 2011 to see what's going on.
All right. So I think I will not try to summarize this panel on here, but what I take away from is that I got a very interesting insight on new technology development. I learned that Project Better Place is a company that wants to earn money with a technical solution of an overall solution, hopefully, to climate change. I think we raised a lot of new questions, which we did not all answer, obviously. But what I take away from it, that we need a much more comprehensive approach, comprehensive in terms of policy answers, but much more beyond of that. Mm-hmm. So I want to thank you all in the audience. I want to thank my panelists for sharing your knowledge with us. It was very interesting. And I wish you all a pleasant evening. And I think we will have the dinner downstairs in the room. So thank you very much for coming. And I hope to see you tomorrow again. Thank you.